Good evening. This is the meeting of the PNB Elections Committee. This is Monday, March 31st. I'm Bob Lederer, the chair pro tem, and we don't have our secretary pro tem with us. So before we go any further, would someone volunteer just for tonight to be secretary?
Serene.
Hello. I was just asking if anyone would volunteer to be secretary for the evening since Yosha isn't with us. Is there anyone who could volunteer tonight only?
I'm driving.
And I'm Ann.
Jan Goodman, KPFK.
Sorry,
hi,
I'm late.
That's okay.
I may have to leave the call early, or I would.
Okay. Is there someone?
I'll note decision.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you, Afia.
I'll be willing to note decision.
Okay, that's really all we need. That's excellent. Thank you so much. Okay, so let me start by calling the roll. Yosh Yamanaka. Jan Goodman.
Here.
Leslie Radford. George Ryder.
Here.
Bill Crozier.
Here.
Wesley Bethune.
Here.
Rob Robinson. He had an emergency. He won't be able to make it. Jane Gatewood. Bonnie Simmons.
Here.
Anthony Fest.
Here.
Tico Chassin. Efian Wangaza.
Here.
Ernesto Tico Chassin.
Just on cue. Welcome. Serene Roberts.
Here.
Okay. All right, so we have quorum, so we will begin now. And first, let's discuss the agenda. The tentative one that I sent out reads as follows for those who are listening. Number one, approve the agenda. Number two, announcement of the next two meeting dates. Three, review and approval of two sets of minutes. For 15, that I'm suggesting allocating 15 minutes. Four, report from the software working group for 10 minutes. Five, reports from WBAI, WPFW, and KPFK signal areas on the status of elections, 30 minutes. Six, committee priorities for the year, 20 minutes. Seven, motion by Rob Robinson referred by the PNB for a task force on elections, 20 minutes. Eight, motion regarding campaign finance reform, 20 minutes. And nine, new business. And I would also like to propose that we set an adjournment time of 10:30. So are there any amendments or other discussion of this proposed agenda?
That's 10:30 Eastern time?
10:30 Eastern, yeah, thank you. Anything? If not, then is there any objection to approving that proposal?
None.
Okay, so we're off to the races. So the next two meeting dates, as per our vote at the last meeting, will be Monday, April 28th at 8:30 p.m., and the next meeting after that will be Monday, June 2nd, also at 8:30 p.m. Okay. Next item is the approval of the last two sets of minutes. The last time we had the copy of the November 26, 2007 minutes, but not everyone had read them. Is there any objection to going ahead and considering those right now? Okay, hearing none, are there any corrections or other comments about those minutes?
Wait, I'm sorry, which ones, Bob?
November 26th.
Well, Serene and Bob are the only ones who were actually there, so
right.
I'm willing to defer.
Yeah, I certainly find these to be accurate. All right, well, hearing no objections, then those minutes are approved. So now we move on to the one we were all present for, the March 5th minutes. Is there any discussion, changes, corrections to those minutes? Okay. Well, hearing none, is there any objection to approving them? Okay. Hearing none, then those minutes are approved. All right. Now we move on to the report from the software working group. And, Bill, you had facilitated that meeting. Would you like to start? And then other members can chime in.
Okay. I sent out, and I'm sorry it's sort of late, an email 2 or 3 hours ago to everyone on the committee.
I'm sorry, Bill, can you speak a little louder?
I'm sorry. Let me take my headset off. I sent out an email 2 or 3 hours ago to everyone on the committee with a summary of the working group meeting based on Serene's excellent minutes, and also just I added some suggestions for consideration, which we can consider later in the agenda on priorities for the next year, if you want. So I don't know if you'd had a chance to read that. Just some of the highlights from the meeting were that we recognized that we needed written procedures for elections, for handling ballots, for preliminary stuff, for counting, all this thing, and there weren't any, apparently. We needed guidelines for local election supervisors, and there weren't any. And that we needed to make sure for future elections that we had somebody who was familiar with the software and who could help train local election supervisors and make sure that we, you know, conduct the elections in a way that was that everyone would perceive as being fair and open and transparent, that sort of thing. And then in executive session, we made some other recommendations.
Okay. Would anyone else who was on the group like to add?
Who else was on the group?
I was, Jan Goodman. I thought that's a pretty good brief summary of. There were other discussions, but I think that was the basic information.
Some of it is moot now because of the change in National Election Supervisor, so I didn't...
By the way,
going over that.
Who is the National Election Supervisor? What's happened with that? Or will somebody update us on that point as we get
Sure. On? Well, I can... this is Bob. I can report what Pacifica's General Counsel, Dan Siegel, reported to the PNB last week at our public meeting, which is that he has recommended and Nicole Sawaya has appointed Caleb Kleppner as acting National Election Supervisor.
Okay.
Who is involved with a company called True Ballot that professionally runs elections for unions and nonprofit organizations. And he's also a former local election supervisor at WBAI from 2004. And we'll talk more about WBAI in just a minute. Are there any other comments from people who were at the working group phone call? Okay, does anyone have any questions for the people who were on the call? Well, things are moving quite quickly tonight, aren't they? All right.
Just to make
sure,
it clear, I mean, there was a lot of discussion about Casey, since that's all moot, then that was, I think, the biggest issue. So, okay, now we can move on.
This is Bill again.
Okay, Serene and then Bill.
I just wanted to sort of, I guess, answer the question for people who might have been listening to the previous committee call and might want to know, well, what was the answer to the question about the software fix? And I don't have my notes in front of me, although I took a minute, but my recollection is that we basically, there had been communication between Ilya, whose last name I don't remember, and Casey, and while the problem had not been fully resolved, there was some workarounds, I think, is the term that Casey used to describe a process of handling things that were not flagging that should have been flagged and so on and so forth. So that's just an answer to anyone who might have heard the last committee call and sort of wondered where the actual software portion of the discussion went. That's it for me.
Okay, Bill?
All right, and I was just going to say some similar things that the one of the, I guess some of the basic concerns were that they, even though they had workarounds sort of identified, none of them have been tested or evaluated, and Casey had not had an opportunity to check this out with the software or run test ballots through to verify that everything would work satisfactorily. So there was a lot of concern about that, and then again with no written procedures. So the plan was to go ahead and start ballot processing, you know, 2 days after that call, or accept replacement ballots at the station, and then start counting ballots and verifying quorum, I guess, the next day. And I guess we'll get a report on all that and the progress since then. So anyway, we'll find out. I guess our major interest now are what we're going to be doing next.
Okay. Any last comments or questions? All right. In that case, we'll move on to the next item, which is reports from WBAI, WPFW, and KPFK on status of elections. So let's start with WBAI. The first thing that happened...
I'm sorry. Bob?
Yes.
I actually want to pull over for that part of the discussion, but I'm on a bridge. Could we start with another area?
Sure. That's.
I want to contribute since I was at the ballot count today.
No, of course.
Okay, thanks.
All right. So let me give a report that I did get over the phone from Rob today, Rob Robinson, when he told me that he wasn't, you know, that he had an emergency such that he couldn't make it tonight. But he did give me the update, which I'm just looking for. 1 second. Okay. All right. So I'm sure most members remember the last conversation was that it was the election supervisor determined that the listener election did not reach quorum at WPFW. So they had the board, you know, had to kind of figure out what to do since at this point the bylaw says that the current board just keeps sitting until the next election. But that wasn't satisfactory for various reasons, not least of which was that four incumbent board members had chosen not to run for a new term. So they're really not interested in sticking around for another 2 years. So the solution that I believe that there was a consensus to follow this approach, I don't know if it was a formal vote, but in any case was to ask Pacifica to allow for the expense of counting the ballots for the purpose of giving guidance to the LSB as they exercise their right under the bylaws that when there are vacancies, they can vote to fill those vacancies. And they wanted to be guided by the voting pattern of the listeners in making their appointments. And so that I think the four incumbents who chose not to run said that they would then resign. That would open up those four seats, and then I think there were five other seats that were, I'm not sure if they were already vacant, but in any case, there are nine seats available. And so the ballots were counted. There was a misunderstanding at one point because it was the League of Women Voters who initially just did the count for quorum, and they and someone made a mistake with the number, but when they were recounted, it was ascertained that there was indeed not quorum. It was, I believe, 1,069 ballots actually came in, listener ballots. So last Friday, the ballots were scanned by...
I'm sorry, did you say there was indeed quorum or there was indeed...
There was not quorum.
Not a quorum, okay.
Yes, sorry. So the ballots were scanned by computer and then sent to Caleb Kleppner, who did the tabulation. I don't think the results have been announced yet, but also keep in mind there were only 10 candidates for 9 seats. And so once that ranking of the top 9 is done, then that'll be sent back to the LSB, and they'll appoint those candidates, you know, in... I guess the top 9 ranked candidates. That's my understanding of where things stand now. Although I don't have a lot more information, if someone has a question, I'll try to answer it.
Bob, it's Bonnie. I do have a question, and maybe you said this. Sorry, there was some background noise here, and I might have missed it. If I understand it correctly, were we to go by the letter of the bylaws, we would be looking back at the 2006 election, since no quorum was reached. Were there candidates who were not elected? I don't know how many candidates PFW had in 2006.
Yeah, my recollection is that all of those runners-up have since either joined the board or are not interested. And so they've exhausted, going into this election, they've exhausted the runners-up list. I think it was a short list to start with, just like this year it's going to be a short list.
Right.
Any other questions?
Well, I have a question, sort of. It's not directly related to the election, but it's based on what Bonnie, that was you, Bonnie?
Yeah.
What Bonnie just asked. Because the pool from which vacancies are normally filled is the remaining pool from the last election.
Correct.
Right? So yeah. In this election, there was no pool, although there was an election. So isn't everyone who ran sort of automatically in that non-pool pool? I mean, I know that's essentially how they're treating it in terms of trying to figure out who gets on, but what did the from this election count as?
Well, just my own, I mean, there's no kind of rule on this, so we can all give our own interpretation, but my interpretation would be you can't really look at a runners-up list to an election that hasn't been officially tabulated. That clause in the bylaws talks about the person who is the next highest vote getter is in line for the seat.
And Norma Foster's on line one.
But there are no officially. I mean, yes, there's been this informal vote count, but that doesn't have any weight in terms of the bylaws.
Well, I know it's not binding.
Well, but it's legally has no weight at all. It's just, you know, it's just information that the board may choose to honor, which in this case they are choosing to honor, but they don't have to.
Well, when you say the board, do you mean
the LSB?
Not the BNB.
So the LSB is the one that's deciding how to handle this,
okay.
You know, based on sort of a consensus that. And now I remember, I think I must have misspoken earlier, because it's not that besides four who didn't run for re-election, there are five vacancies. It's that there are five people who did want to run for, who did run for re-election, and I believe they're also agreeing to abide by the results, you know, which I have no idea if that means any of them will actually no longer sit on the board or if they all got re-elected or if they all were among the top nine. I don't have that level of detail. Okay, anything else on this?
I don't know whether it's appropriate for us to do it, but it seems to me that this was actually a rather wise solution at PFW, and I'd like to somehow to commend them for it. I mean, it took a difficult situation, and it resolved it in a way that sort of honored our commitment to democratic participation, and I like the way it came out. So is it appropriate for elections committee to say something like that, or, should I make it as a motion, or?
I have a question. This is Jan Goodman.
Yeah, go ahead, Jan.
It sounded like somebody said that the bylaws say that if there's a vacancy, that the LSB can elect new people. Is that what somebody said? Or
yeah, it was.
It was implied, I'm wondering if that's. I mean, I am. You know, I don't think I've ever read the bylaws all the way through. I've read a lot about the elections, and I hadn't noticed this, and I'd be very happy to hear that this.
Okay, let me clarify, because I said it, but I may not have been as complete as I should have been. What it says is that if there's a vacancy, the next runner-up from the preceding election automatically is seated. However, if you get to the end of the list of runners-up, you've exhausted that list, then the LSB simply holds an election by, I guess it would be by majority, by IRV if it's a single seat that's vacant, or by STV if it's multiple seats.
I'm not even sure it says that. I think it just says appoints, doesn't it?
Well,
yeah, I think it actually does say appoint.
Okay. Well, but and then somewhere else it says that the way you appoint is you appoint, I mean, that the way you elect is always by IRV or STV.
Right, right, yeah. That's
right, except that the word in the section we're talking about, I think Bonnie's right, I don't think it's elect. I think it's appoint.
Okay, I have it in front of me now. In the event that no eligible and available candidate from the last election is found, then the delegates for that radio station shall appoint a member of the appropriate class to serve as delegate and fill the seat for the remainder of the term. But appoint, as far as I understand it, the word appoint couldn't possibly mean anything other than elect. There's no other mechanism in an election.
Okay. Sure, you toss coins. I mean, it's a point. But anyway, fortunately, we're going to have to deal with that. Right?
Is there, exactly.
It's just not the word appoint, because, I mean, elect, because an election is the list, not B.
Okay, anyway. I think it's a good solution to the. I agree that it's a good solution, and I think a little resolution for what it's worth. I mean, who is it to, and what is it worth? I guess before we spend
the WDA board time on a non-problem.
You know, I think it's worthwhile issuing something that says somebody did a good thing, because we'll have lots of things to complain about.
Okay. The DND Elections Committee hereby recognizes and applauds the WPFW-LSB for finding a, quote, democratic mechanism for identifying persons to be seated in the non-election just held. I don't know.
Well, you know, I think, you know,
pretty good on the spot.
may I suggest this, that if this is to be meaningful, that what we need to include in the resolution is to actually say what the problem was, how they solved it. I mean, we can say we applaud it, here's what the problem was, here's how they solved it, and this we think is an excellent solution. Because otherwise, you look at this resolution and you have to go to 15 million other places to figure out what they did, how they did it, and it becomes totally meaningless.
Well, Jan, I think that's, let me just say something. I think that's a good point, but since we don't have anyone on this call from WPFW, I'm certainly not prepared to stipulate that the account I gave you a few minutes ago was 100% accurate. So
well, what?
I think maybe we should defer this till the next meeting when we can get that you know, detailed, correct view of what happened or summary, and then we can put that into a motion. But I think it's true that it would be the most educative if it had the details rather than just a general applaud what they did when people don't know what they did.
Yeah, so why don't we table this until next meeting?
Serene, you want to speak?
That's what I was going to say. We should just table it.
Okay. Is there any objection to the technical term in Robert's Rules moving to postpone this matter? Any objection? Okay, then this matter is postponed. We'll take it up again at the next meeting, and I'll contact Rob and let him know that this happened so he can prepare maybe, you know, something in writing to give us a summary of what happened. Okay, so now, Serena, are you ready to talk about WBAI?
Yeah, hold up. Well, I'm always ready to talk about WBAI.
All right, let me just give one little quick piece of background of how we got to today, which is that on the day that, I guess it was the day before the votes were supposed to be counted on, I believe it was March 15th, it was determined that there were still reports of voters who had either not gotten ballots or had just gotten them, and that they needed more time to make sure that everyone who was entitled to vote could vote. So they extended the period until, Serene, help me here. What was the last day?
The 23rd?
What was that?
The 23rd? Am I in the wrong week?
Yeah, the 23rd sounds right, yeah. So then on the 23rd, there was a collection of the ballots from the post office and then from the previous round that had been sealed by court order on November 19th. Those were all picked up, brought to the station, and
I'm sorry, you know what? That date was the 15th. The plan was to have ballots collected on the 15th with a hand count beginning the following Monday, running Monday through Friday, with the last day of the count being the 23rd, I think.
Okay.
You don't have a calendar handy.
Okay. All right. So then on that date, what the notice that the local election supervisor gave was that the only thing that would happen in this on this day at the station was to simply count the ballots, well, separate the listener ballots from the staff, which are visible by the color of the envelope, and then once separated to count the number of ballots without opening them in order to determine whether quorum had been met. And that was all. But when people assembled there, actually, the supervisor said, well, no, actually, we're going to open the ballots and check the barcodes to begin that process of, you know, later being able to verify duplicates and so forth, which the candidates had not been given any notice that this was going to happen. And some of the candidates filed a very strong objection afterwards that this had been done in their absence or without their knowledge that they would be able to be present. But in any case, so that happened with one batch of ballots, the largest batch. They were opened, and well, I guess maybe Serene, you can jump in here and add.
Okay, the on the 15th, they did open envelopes and separated checks and notes from envelopes. It was slightly problematic because there was also a report of a large number of envelopes that had been received within one, either a priority or express mail envelope. Apparently, a BAI director who used to be on the elections committee said that there were 100 ballots in there, and without any investigation of the source of those 100 ballots or how she knew there were 100 ballots in there, those ballots were merged with the other, you know, 2,300 ballots, so that there's absolutely no way now. And then they were individually opened without anyone making a note about what was actually in that envelope. So there's no way for us to ever determine if there was some sort of pattern among those ballots that the director seemed to have some information on. So that was particularly troublesome.
Point of information?
Yes.
Serene, was this done in such a way so that the dates of when ballots were received was preserved? Or, I mean, are they sort of filed in categories by the dates? I mean, there's still this lawsuit, which I take it is still...
There's a lawsuit, and there are actually like six batches of envelopes. The only ballots that were open and counted, and this is another part of the concern about what happened on the 15th, is that the only ballots which were counted were the ballots which are in fact the ballots that the plaintiffs in the lawsuit are insisting are the only ballots that should really count. So the plaintiffs, some of whom were present that day along with their attorney, were able to have a review, if you will, of the contents of those ballots without, I think only one of the actual candidates were at the ballot count, because the understanding was they were just going to be counting envelopes.
Right.
So that was, you know.
And this was done with the supervision of the local election supervisor?
Correct.
Yes.
And whoever else was there from both sides?
Right.
And that was it?
Right.
Well, yeah, the numbers were hardly even. There were a couple of people who are not regularly seen at meetings on either side. But, you know, I mean, there are a number of concerns. There was also a concern, and, you know, none of this is personal. I think our local election supervisor is a well-intentioned person, but he was also out of the room for about 30 minutes, completely out of sight, out of view of the ballots and the ballot count area, with all the ballots on the table except for those that they were copying. They were copying PIN codes from certain ballots.
Who's the
so all of this happened on this day. I'm sorry?
Who's the day that was copying the PIN code?
It was the local election supervisor and witnesses. And I was one of the witnesses to photocopying, but it didn't really occur to me until we got back there that, wait a minute, he's just left, 2,500 ballots open in a room with no supervision. And that was his job, was to secure the chain of custody.
Just to be precise then, these are ballots that were submitted prior to November 16th, or what was
the
date?
November 19th, right.
November 19th. Okay.
So, there were several problems with the way that process occurred on that day. So, Serene, you want to take it from there?
Are we looking at the 15th?
Well, if you have anything to add, sure.
Yeah, I mean, there were... It seemed to me, and I'm not an attorney, although I understand we may have a couple on this call, it seemed to me particularly interesting that the only ballots that were opened were the ballots that are, in fact, the focus of energy in this lawsuit, that the ballots were opened without notice, that the ballots were... There's a loud truck. Sorry, hope you can still hear me. That the ballots were... I've got to move. That the ballots were opened without notice, that the ballots were left unattended, that contents of the ballots, namely one of the slates had done a mailing which violated several aspects of the fair campaign rules, including utilizing a particular mechanism to sort of harvest the mailing addresses of all of our listeners. And when the ballots were opened, apparently some of the contents of the slate's mailing were included with the ballots, some of the ballots, and the local election supervisor, over the protest of someone else who was present, gave them to someone associated with the slate. So contents were sent along with the official ballot to the official address, and the local election supervisor just handed them over. Which would have been improper, I think, under any conditions, but certainly when the work itself, if you want to call it work, the product itself was already the subject of a violation, had been adjudicated as such. So that was not a good day in Pacifica history.
Just one other thing. The decision to open the ballots rather than just count them was made by the local election supervisor?
Right.
Okay.
Okay, Serene, you want to pick it up from there?
Okay, so that's all that sort of stands out to me right now about that day. But since then, as I said, we have several batches of ballots. We have those ballots, and we have, I think, five other sets, which were looked at today. And I can just briefly give you a rundown. We actually segregated. Well, they had been segregated, and each time that they had been put in storage, they had been taped, and the tape had been signed by an election supervisor and theoretically at least one party from the two major sides. And today, beginning at about, I think we actually got started maybe around 10, we did the scanning of all the ballots, keeping the batches segregated. We did the listener ballots first and got some very, very preliminary rough notes, in terms of preferences, looking only at the first four votes on each ballot. But the ballots actually still has to go through and process the write-ins, of which I think there were about 100, almost 130, write-ins. In many cases, people wrote in people who were already on the ballot, making it clear that the ballots are confusing as hell for people. Replacement ballots in some cases were sent out, by the way, without instructions, making it that much more difficult for even very savvy people to figure out what they were supposed to do. So he still has to do a lot with regard to interpreting voter intent. And we'll be working on that over the next, you know, whatever.
And this was today's work was done under the supervision of Caleb Kleppner,
and our local election supervisor was also there. There were, I think, maybe about 10 observers present. The plaintiff's attorney came by but did not come in. And the, as I said, the ballots have all been scanned. They've all been labeled and batched and stored, restored. The envelopes for today's opening were stored separately, and the envelopes, including those 100, you know, sort of questionable ballots, mystery ballots, remained stored with the other ballots that had been opened based on the pickup from the post office in November. So that was those are all returned to storage today, this evening.
And just for definiteness, the five other categories of ballots corresponded to different days when they had arrived?
Yeah. We have the first batch, which were those that were in the post office box when they made the first pickup on November 19th, and that was pursuant to the court order. The ballots that had been voted in person at the station on November 16th, that's the second batch. There was a ballot pickup on December 7th that had not been announced. The local and national election supervisor, that's Dale and Casey, picked that up in December, and that was stored separately and therefore also counted separately. The in-person ballots at the station on Friday the 14th and 15th, the ballots picked up at the post office on the 15th. This is prior to that ballot opening. They picked them up, but they didn't open those that day. And then there were, I think, a bunch of primarily returns that were picked up today, some return letters. And I don't remember offhand how many they may have gotten altogether.
Okay, thank you.
There were 2,818 images stored in terms of listener ballots, and the staff 125. And remember, these are images as opposed to actual ballots, because I think in one case a note got scanned in, and you know.
So it greatly exceeded quorum in both cases.
Yes. There's also an issue of some ballots which were picked up, which were, I think, replacement ballots that I believe may have been sent out from Berkeley, where apparently unique pins were not used, and I'm not quite sure what we're going to be able to do about those. The original ballots went out with, I think, with six-digit pin numbers, and then there were some alphanumeric PIN numbers also assigned that weren't readily readable by the scanner system. There was, and then there was a sort of generic code that I'm not quite sure how they're going to deal with that either. There were some ballots that were replacement ballots that were issued in person at the station, and there's a log of corresponding, you know, names that obviously we didn't have access to and don't need to have access to. But it's a mechanism for the supervisors to then convert and create a PIN number that actually will work with the system, or to input it manually as may, you know, whichever works better.
Bill.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
I take it there were no written procedures for any of this. Like, in what, like, what do you do if the PIN code doesn't, you can't scan it, or things like that?
There were no written procedures. There was a discussion, you know, Caleb sort of discussed with people what his intention was, and I won't try to repeat that because I'm not a techie and I don't want to misquote him. But there were notes being taken by parties on both sides, and I'm sure many versions of it will become will be distributed over the next few days. Basically, what he did was for the ballots from November 19th, it's just the largest batch of 2,500-something ballots, roughly 2,500 ballots. Those were already out of envelopes. Those are the ones that opened on the 15th. And they were scanned in batches ranging from, you know, maybe 60 to 130 or so, and, you know, labeled and put aside. And then for the other batches, they were opened individually and scanned. And the process was that we would scan them, and then after the images had been scanned, then he imported the information. There's probably a couple of people on this call who can do this better than me. But he imported it to auditing software. And we had a problem with some of the ballots getting sliced as we used the letter opener, the automatic letter opener. So that was slightly problematic. We had to retape a few of them, which I think might have then made it not impossible, but just means that he has to spend more time sort of, you know, checking those ballots, because the ballot, I'm probably giving you guys more detail than you want, so tell me when to stop.
Oh, well, actually, what I was wondering, I'm not trying necessarily to find fault right now, but I think somebody needs to write down all the little problems so that we can learn from this, so we, when we do develop some procedures, we can maybe come up with things to help prevent some of these problems, or at least know how to deal with them fairly when they come up, if they come up again. So I would appreciate it if somebody there who can, you know, can make, maybe the LES is doing this, but can make a note of all the little problems or big problems that came up.
Yeah, my experience is that, well, Caleb Klepner, who's with True Ballot, and they'd done our elections, I think, in 04, was it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're real professionals. They've done a lot of elections, and he will undoubtedly write a report of the end of the process in which he has, you know, he's been involved with, and that will address, you know, the concerns that you raise.
Okay, and I know that I'd heard from some others earlier about things like, you know, barcodes maybe printed with the wrong inadequate resolution. Or are the scanning done in adequate resolution?
Well, the scanning
like
seems pretty sensitive because we got very faint. We got places where people used check marks or they only shaded half the box, and we were still able to read that.
Okay.
So, you know.
I have a discussion question. This is Tico from KPFA.
Go ahead.
I think it was much, you know.
I'm sorry, Tico, can you speak any louder?
Sure, let me just, maybe I'll switch from that. I definitely wanted to echo the kind of question that I heard of, you know, how are we going to get this information in writing both for our own use, and then also I feel like we do have a certain need to pass this information along to the future National Election Supervisor and kind of have an official, at least an official list of problems. And then what do we as individuals do with our own reactions to these problems? Because some of them, you know, there's almost too many problems to discuss one by one, and I know that's almost become a main topic of what went wrong this year. And it's very hard to keep all the different details and different people's versions straight, and I don't know if we have a way to both distribute our own official version for our use, and then also, you know, because, I mean, are we going to tell the next National Election Supervisor to go check the Internet and see what different people complained about?
Well, Jan, I have a suggestion after.
Well,
yeah, and
okay.
Serene.
Serene and then Jan.
Yeah, each election supervisor, and particularly, I remember Kenny Mostrom did a report. His report, I think, is about 200 and something pages, and it's actually very comprehensive. So I don't think it's a matter of having to reinvent the wheel, but I do think that whoever the election supervisor is should become fully familiar with the reports of the persons who previously served in that position. And my recollection of his report, and I don't remember all of it, it's more than 200 pages, as I said, is that it really covered a lot of material and also incorporated local election supervisor reports about how they handled both, you know, local matters during the campaign, but also things that came up during the ballot count. So, I was kind of surprised, and, you know, this is absolutely no reflection on Caleb, who you know, as I said, is a professional and has behaved in a, you know, who can handle the madness that becomes Pacifica during election time if not at other times. There was so much concern on this committee for the need to have written procedures before we could proceed with a ballot count under the last national election supervisor, but there was not a whisper, you know, about the fact that those same written procedures were not provided before this ballot count. So, you know, I think we should, like, use a consistent standard. I think that's a problem. And I also just, you know, I'll wait till Jan's done, but I just wanted to add one more thing about our ballot count today, and then I need to start driving, so.
And
you can finish, and then I'll go afterwards. Mine has to do with procedure of how we should write a report. So why don't you finish?
Okay, I'm just curious. How do we go from, you know, especially as new committee members, how do we? I don't know what the overall work plan of the committee is as far as, you know, do we just observe problems or just, you know?
Okay, Tico, if you could hold that thought, Serene
sure.
just wants to finish her report from today, and then we can go to, you know, how to move forward.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Serene.
There were also two incidents where we thought we were dealing with empty envelopes where we found ballots, so that with the staff ballots that had been opened on March 15th, there was an empty, well, what was thought to be an empty stack of envelopes, and in the process of counting them, it was discovered that, in fact, there was at least one ballot, and he did find one ballot in one of the envelopes and removed it, which actually resolves a concern that someone who had been present on March 15th had raised, because they had initially left the room with 56 ballots, and when they came back to the room, I think it is, they only had 55, and no one could explain what had happened. And apparently what had happened is that the ballot had been reinserted into the envelope after the PIN numbers were copied. I've never seen the list of PIN numbers, so I don't know how many PIN numbers they actually have copies of, but I know that what they reported when they came into the room was different from what they left. And the discovery of today's ballot resolved that. That's one. And we had a similar incident that happened later in the day with a listener ballot that was found among what had been reported as an empty envelope. They had various people who helping open the envelopes, on a common table. Okay, that's it for me. If there are any other questions with regard to this, ask them now. Mm-hmm.
So what is the state of affairs at this point in time?
There are images of all the ballots. The local election supervisor has one CD that has not just the ballot information, but the PIN information, and identifies the vote, the membership list and address and so forth. All of that information the local election supervisor has on one disk, the national election supervisor has on one disk, and there's one that's stored with the ballots back in the storage space. Those observers who were present received a copy of the disk, of disks with the images of all, like, 3,100 ballots or however many we had, 29-something ballots, staff and listeners, and also showing them broken down by batches, which I will say, although you didn't ask me, caused some concern, and certainly caused some concern for me, because what we've essentially done is distributed to the plaintiffs all the information they need to determine where they would have stood at various parts of the collection process, which I think will then, you know, they were debating whether or not they wanted to act on principle today, is what one of them said. And I'm not sure where they're going to come down on that, but whether or not the issue is really winning the election or what date we should observe. as opposed to counting all the ballots. I think we've now sort of created a situation where folks can go and they say, well, you know, if we insist on the cutoff of the 19th of November, then this is where we were. And if we include those ballots on the 16th, and then if we include the December as opposed to the March and so on and so forth. And I just think the situation...
That's up to the judge.
I'm sorry. And I think the situation has been sufficiently manipulated that was perhaps not the best course to take. Because we've never had a lawsuit... And certainly not a lawsuit. Well, we've not had a lawsuit in any election, to my knowledge, and certainly not one that has lasted, dragged out the election this long and cost us this much money. And I'm not sure that that was the wisest thing to do, because I don't think we're really operating on a principle with regard to some of the conduct that has happened around this election.
I'm just trying to have a simple line that state describes what the state of affairs are at this point for the purposes of note-taking, whether or not that was information that should have been provided is a decision that will be made by the judge, not by this committee. So my
I'm aware of that, but I'm, as one of the people who had concerns about it, I didn't want to leave it out and then have it said that I didn't honestly represent everything that happened in the room. So it's merely a point of information or sharing of information.
So my question is whether or would it be accurate to simply say that there remain differences and that... I don't hear any resolution or proposed resolution on the part of the vote counters. So is the information that was distributed also to be submitted to the court and the court make the final determination, which it will, but is that what people have agreed to at this point, or is there any kind of agreement at all?
I don't think there's any agreement. My expectation would be that the judge would not be interested in the results so much as in the process. But the ballot count per se has not been completed. There are a number of, as I said, there are some very rough results based on the first four preferences expressed by voters, but it's not something that may change significantly, but there will be likely some change.
Are you prepared to do the written report that will describe what has happened and that can be made available to the board at the upcoming meeting?
I would expect that the election supervisor would do that. I mean, I'd be glad to offer my description, but that's, as I said, one description of many. There were about 10 people in the room. I'm sure that means there are at least four different positions on everything.
This is George. I had a suggestion about that. It might be useful, actually, to invite people from different perspectives. I mean, Serena is coming from one part of the controversy. There are people in the room who are in the other part. And just invite them to say, what do you think were the main problems here? What did you see with the issues? So we'll have a collection of things within which presumably is everything that needs to be fixed. So
I think that's... Sorry,
yeah.
Go ahead.
So anyway, I would make that a suggestion that we offer the people who were there as part of the procedure to submit a report. What do they think needs to be changed so that the controversy is lessened in the future and that people are convinced that the process is fair?
Well, isn't that why we have a local and national election supervisor?
Well, he'll see some things. What I'm hoping to get at in this way is that we'll get different perspectives about it. Some people will think one thing was a big mistake, and people will think other things are a big mistake. With inviting people to contribute, they can't really complain afterwards that their voices weren't heard and that we weren't seriously taking into account what they thought were inequities in the procedure.
Okay, well, who would like to address George's suggestion?
This is Jan.
Go ahead.
I'm not 100% sure of what of how to carry of George's suggestion of the actually doing it, but
I could flesh it out if you want. But
okay, but I'm thinking. Well, one idea that I have, which I basically the concept of everybody sort of having their say, putting in what they have to say about it, I think is a good idea. One thought that I have just in terms of sort of our work in general, and which would include various elections in particular, is that we sort of work in sort of an outline form, that we have different topics like opening the ballots. And in a way, kind of like a flow chart, somewhere between a flow chart and an outline form, where you have opening the ballots, and that we just, you know, have whatever rule has been come up, has if we find that there has been a rule before about how you open ballots, that we, you know, say, you know, existing rule. And then issues regarding the rule, what happened, you know, how we think it ought to, what we propose should be the ultimate rule, and then go into the problems below that for people who are interested in going into more detail of what has happened and how we, you know, why we came up with this particular resolution. And within that sub part, have, you know, make space for different people to discuss what happened in various situations. It seems to me that either the election supervisor, Caleb, at this point, will be making, you know, certain decisions that will be his decisions to make. If the judge is involved, the judge is going to make decisions. But it also sounds it sounds to me like, you know, the case might be dismissed because, you know, people don't want to go through a big exercise of a lawsuit for various reasons. So ultimately, somebody else is going to make the decision, I believe, other than us, for any pending issues. It's the future issues that we should be, I think, that we are tasked with. Am I correct?
I think that's our general purview, is to improve, is to recommend procedures that will improve all, you know, any future elections to avoid the problems that have come up in the past.
Yeah. But anyway, that's my proposal in terms of how we kind of flesh out the our work so that it's, you know, ish to
Leslie Radford.
Okay. Well, let me say something.
Bob,
here.
If I might, it seems to me that in light of the fact that with every election there has been a problem with questions of integrity, questions of competency, questions of timeliness, that and the common thread appears to be the absence of folks able to manage the elections, that there are people and organizations and companies that actually do elections without all of these issues, that we would be doing a greater service to collect the difficulties that have arisen and to catalog them and pass them on to professionals who can then bring their training skill and experience to bear and customize to the extent indicated by the difficulties that have been identified. The idea that, we're going to reinvent the wheel and do so perfectly, I think, is saying, if not asking, a bit much.
Well, I think that's a very good way to proceed, and I'd like to add a couple of suggestions.
Which way?
What Afia just said, which is to try to catalog the problems as different people see them. And obviously some people will think one thing was a problem and other people will think that that wasn't a problem at all. It was done fine. But whatever the opinions are, gather them all, categorize them, and then figure out who are the team of outside experts that we want to present these problems to for the kinds of solutions that in many cases they've already come up with from their prior experience, or in some cases maybe they haven't had these specific permutations that then they can help us brainstorm how to solve them. But I want to add another piece to this, which is Serene mentioned the thorough reports that some of the national election supervisors have written in past years. And I don't know, and I would like to ask if the committee would like to task me as the chair to go to the intermediary in Pacifica, who at the moment is Dan Siegel, and ask him, is there an arrangement with either the former National Election Supervisor or the acting one currently for them to write a report? And if so, obviously we'd want to receive it as soon as possible. And if not, then that's important for us to know, because then it means we may have to play some role in helping piece together some of the puzzle pieces. So, and then the other thing I thought was simultaneously we could set up tonight a working group to start generating a list of categories that they've heard about or that they've seen problems identified. And just purely the name of the category, not the detail of what went wrong, but just the type of areas that there have been problems, and come back to the next meeting and, you know, kind of develop that further. So those are my two suggestions for how to proceed.
Bob, it's Bonnie, if I want to recognize.
Sure. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Just cueing off of something that you just said, is it not true, it may in fact be in a certain sense moot, but maybe not, isn't it in fact true that a good part of the prior National Election Supervisor's job, which he was being paid for, was to write that report?
It certainly was part of the original contract. I just don't know how things ended, and that's what we have to find out.
Yeah, we really should find out.